Hey, this is Pastor Ricky at MetaChurch, and I just wanted to take a moment to welcome our entire podcast listening audience and share a little bit about what's taking place at MetaChurch during the month of December. It's a special time for us as we begin our Make Room Christmas series and our Make Room Christmas offering. Every year around this time, we step out in faith and do a Christmas offering that enables our church to continue to make a greater impact and reach more people both in New York City and around the world. And we want to invite you, our listening audience, to be a part of this year's Make Room offering. You see, we believe that God is inviting us to make room in our lives so that He can fill it with even greater things. And this year's offering is about setting up our church to have greater impact in 2020 and beyond. And so if you'd like to be a part of it, we want to encourage you to listen, we want to encourage you to follow, but we also want to invite you and encourage you to give. You can visit meta.church/give, select the Christmas offering option, and designate any amount that you'd like to help support this ministry and the mission that God has called us to. We're grateful for you, and we cannot wait to celebrate how God will move through our Make Room offering. So as I mentioned, we are in week three, which is really the last week of this series that we started to begin December called Make Room. And this whole series has kind of been on this premise or this idea that, you know, God invites us to make room. And that as we make room, it's not just something that we do for the sake of doing it, but so that God could actually respond and move in our lives. That as we create room, it actually gives God room to do something and to move on our behalves. And so, you know, it's been a lot of fun to kind of work through this series. And my wife, Krista, preached last week, and I was just about to say the same thing. She crushed it, she just did such a phenomenal job, and so it was so awesome to see that. But, you know, one of the things that I thought about this week, because, you know, we've talked about, and all of this stuff has kind of been moving toward this point of coming to a place to offer something to God, and I guess for those of you who care, we are kind of building towards something as a church, you know, to give so that we believe, like, not just in our lives, but in our church, that God wants to make room here at Meta Church. And so as we step out in faith, you know, it's kind of been one of those things that people talk about and they pray through and they respond. And so, you know, it's been really neat, but it kind of has done a couple things for me personally. You know, this is the final message that I'm preaching for this calendar year. And it really is a privilege to preach and to have a voice into other people's lives. But really to, you know, the humbling side of it is that God would actually allow me to do this and then call me into it and then actually use what's being said to make a difference in people's lives. And throughout this month, it's been incredible to see people take steps of faith already to respond to what God is doing, to move and act in faith through that. And it really is incredibly humbling. Like, it's humbling to think that God would say, hey, Ricky, or hey, Krista, do this, speak this, say this, because I want to speak into someone's life, and I want to speak into their heart, and I want to move them to a place, not just financially through generosity, or not just in our church through serving, but that God would actually use what we have to offer to make a difference in your lives. And I guess to close out the year, the thing that I wanted to say is that I really don't take that for granted. Personally, I don't take it for granted. I consider it quite a privilege, and it's very humbling to me that God would kind of give us that space, that God would give us that opportunity to speak into your lives and to see you guys respond. It's so encouraging, and it's so exciting because I know that this is just kind of the tip of the iceberg of what's to come. And so we're going to jump into our particular message here in a moment, but I wanted to kind of preface all of that with this and just say it really is an honor to be able to do this and to be able to share with you guys. And so before I jump into the message, I wanted to kind of just open us with a quick word of prayer, and then we'll get started. So Father, again, we are eager to receive from you, Lord. We're eager to hear from you, to have you speak into our lives once again. So Father, may we receive what you have, and may you receive what we give. Lord, that in faith, as we give, not just of our money, but of our time, our energies, of our lives back to you, God, may you receive it as an offering, as something that pleases you, as something that honors you. We pray this in Jesus' name. Amen. Amen. So this morning, I want to kind of give you this idea or this concept to start of bigger and better. How many of you remember the game Bigger and Better as a kid, where you're like kind of trading up, right? You start with like a dime or a paperclip or something like that, and then you kind of work your way up and seeing who can take you on something, offer you something bigger or better. And now I never really got that far in the game, to be honest. I played as a kid, but I just don't have the patience and the tolerance to kind of trade up for something or barter back and forth over something. But I've heard of people and who have play this game, and people have worked their way up to like cars, pickup trucks, or boats, you know, over the course of like years. Okay, so I don't really get that mindset. I'm just kind of like that. I don't have the patience for it. But the idea that I want to share with you is this idea of bigger and better. And that's kind of what happens when we make room in our lives for God to move. That when we make room, it actually gives us the opportunity to experience something bigger and better from God. But there's a catch, right? There's always a catch. And the catch is simply that, you know, in order for you to inherit or receive that bigger and better, you have to offer something in exchange, right? You have to trade over something. And that trading of something is typically some sort of sacrifice, right? It's some sort of, you know, I have to give this up for something. Like whenever we talk about this idea of making room, you have, there always comes a point, like kind of like a figurative pull the trigger moment where you have to commit to the sacrifice that it's going to take to make room. We've used the metaphor, the analogy of, you know, if you're preparing space in your apartment or if you're making room in your home, that you have a vision for something, you see, okay, this could be better in this way. There's potential greater than what is currently being used or how it's currently being adapted. And so there's the vision for it. But then there's the preparation, right? You start taking into account, okay, if we're going to make room, then we have to like get this, we have to take care of this, we have to set up this, we have to set aside some things over here. And then ultimately there comes the point where you have to make the sacrifice, where you say, okay, what was currently in this place or what was once in this place or in this space now has to be removed or taken away from this in order to make room and accommodate what I intend or what I saw from the very beginning. You tracking with me so far?
Yeah.
Okay, great. And so that whole concept is true in making room, but it's not just true when it comes to like following God. It's not just true when it comes to like offering. This is true in all of our lives. This idea, this principle that making room requires sacrificing something of some kind. I'll give you three personal examples from my life that have really nothing to do with money. Okay, the first example was when Chris and I were about to get married. And so we had, I just moved into the place where we were going to be living. We were in Jacksonville, Florida, like the west side of Jacksonville. And it was not very pleasant. It was not very nice where we lived. But we were moving into this converted two-car garage that had been converted into an apartment. And so it wasn't really all that glamorous. Our rent, to put it in perspective, our rent was $400 a month. $400 a month. And then now this place, like it worked. It was sufficient, right? This is like the perks of getting married at 22. And so it was like $400 a month. It was a converted garage. It had a bedroom. It had like a living room. But like this place, what like it had a half size like oven. Like you would buy a take and bake pizza or something, like a frozen pizza, and it actually didn't fit in the oven. That's how small the oven was. The shower. Okay, the shower wasn't like the type of shower that you get in and like soap yourself up and like, you know, enjoy. The shower was the kind that you soak the walls first, you turn on the water, you get in and you turn around, and that's how you clean yourself. Like, that's how small this shower was. I'm not even lying. This thing was tiny. It was so small. The apartment was like, you know, whatever. But we were getting married, we're living on our own, and I got to move in first. And so I got to move in first, which meant I got to decorate the way I wanted. But we were so broke. We were so broke. And so, you know, we were like literally, when I say like banking on our wedding to buy our stuff, like we were literally banking on our wedding, like waiting for those checks, waiting for that cash in order to get the things that we needed for this like converted apartment garage thing that we were living in. And so when I moved in, I decided to decorate it the way I wanted to decorate it because I had a couple months before Crystal would be moving in. So why not prep it the way I wanted since she wasn't going to be moving in a couple months anyway? And so I decorated this place like, you know, typical guy thing. I took like all my sports memorabilia. Like I had like autographed photos of like Larry Fitzgerald, Anquan Bowles, and different people that I had met over the years in different circumstances. And so like I had all like the sports memorabilia like on the shrine, on the wall, like on one side of the living room. And then, you know, this is 2007. So Christmas of 2006, Christmas Day, I was working. I had nothing to do. I wasn't with my family. So I decided I'd go to like a Chinese buffet to eat Christmas. And like the food was good. But what was better was they gave a Christmas gift to every person who came. And that was a 2007 calendar. And so I still had this calendar. And so I hung it up on the other wall, like this Chinese calendar that had nothing in English except for the dates. Like I knew the numbers, but it was up on the wall. And so I had it like flipped over to June when I moved into the apartment, right? Because the calendar on the wall is nice. And then our TV, you know, this is back before like flat screens were affordable to poor people. Like this was like flat screens were like ultra luxury. So I had a box TV or whatever, but I didn't have anywhere to put it yet because again, we were banking on our furniture to come through to the wedding. And so I'm like, well, I've got these milk crates. So I put our box TV on top of these milk crates, put a cardboard box over top of that, like flat to kind of give it a little bit more stability and had it all set up. And then the crowning like piece of like decor, the Shekinah glory of this whole apartment was, of course, you know, my heritage, an homage to my heritage, a Puerto Rico flag, like up on the wall, right? Because if you're Puerto Rican, you got to have a flag somewhere. People aren't going to know that you're Puerto Rican. And so I had the Puerto Rico flag up on the wall, and you should have seen Krista's eyes the first time she walked into this place. When she walked in, I mean, they're like shock. Here's like middle class, suburban, Seattleite, you know, doing well. Like, I mean, she was about to cancel the wedding. We were like 2 months away from getting married. She's like, this is not going to be the rest of my life. Like, I am not about to fall into this. And she walked in, her eyes were just like, this has got to go. And I was like, what do you mean? She said, we can't do this. I was like, what do you mean we? Like, I'm here. She's like, if you want me to move in here, like, we can't do this. And so I came to this realization, like, okay, well, I've got to make a sacrifice here, because if I want to make room to accommodate my supposed to be wife, like, into this house or into this garage or apartment or whatever it was, like, I've got to like make some sacrifices and like kind of, you know, take down the Chinese calendar and actually get like a TV stand and not like milk crates. And I've got to, you know, take down the sports memorabilia, and God forbid, I got to take down the Puerto Rico flag. Not because she doesn't like Puerto Ricans, because she was about to marry one, but because she just didn't like the Puerto Rico decor theme throughout our living room and in such prominence. And so technically, I try to make the argument, well, this is a garage, so technically it's a garage that I'm hanging this up. It's not the living room, but that didn't fly either. So I had to make room in order to allow or accommodate, you know, I had to make a sacrifice, I should say, in order to make room for my soon-to-be wife. Second example, about 9 years ago or whatever it's been now, 9 years ago when my wife found out she was pregnant with our daughter. And so at that time of my life, that stage of my life, I was playing basketball 4 times a week, at least 4 times a week. Now, you may not know this, but I played in college. I love basketball. It's my favorite sport. I was playing a Sunday afternoon league. I was playing a Monday night open run. On Fridays, while my wife worked, I would be at the gym practicing as if I was going to the NBA. I'd be practicing. And then Saturday, I was in another league in South Portland. And so I was playing 4 times a week, minimum 4 times a week, for multiple hours. And it was fine because it was just me and my wife. We didn't have nothing to worry about. But when my daughter, you know, when my wife found out she was pregnant, of course, we're going to have a baby. I recognized that, you know what, like, in order to make room for this baby, not like in a physical sense from, you know, the house or the room or whatever, but to make room in my life, I have to make some sacrifices here. And basketball was one of the first places that I recognized, you know what, I can sacrifice this. As much as I love basketball, as much as I enjoyed it, as much fun as I had, as I was in tip-top shape, I was running up and down courts, I, like, I loved it. But for as much as I love that, I recognize, you know what, I've got to sacrifice this aspect to a lesser degree. And I went from playing basketball 4 times a week to down to like 1, maybe 2 times a week. But it was worth it because I'm like, you know, I'm making room for my daughter. I'm making room for a family. I get to be the type of dad that I didn't have growing up. I get to be the type of husband that I didn't see growing up. I get to be for my daughter something more than the guy who's like, well, you take care of the kid because I got to go play basketball with a bunch of other 35-year-olds who thought they would have made it to the pros if they didn't like blow out their knee, which is everyone's story. Everyone's story. I'm like, wow, what are the chances? Everyone could have been pro if their knees would have held up. Like, I'm at the tiff I've got with God. When I get to heaven, I'm going to ask, why do you let everyone's knees blow out? It's just like, it doesn't make sense. But anyway, that was the second example. Third example was here, moving to New York, starting a church, right? And so we knew we were going to be starting in our apartment. We knew that eventually we'd move into a different space, like where we are now. And so starting a church was, you know, an important thing. But we knew kind of part of this way that God wanted us to start was to meet or begin meeting in our apartment. And so we recognized that we needed to find an apartment that would allow not just for people to gather, but eventually like would have space of some kind for us to like keep stuff, because we know that like storage and, you know, permanent facility for a church wasn't really in all likelihood going to happen off the bat. And so we found an apartment that we love. We found an apartment that fit. But like, literally, guys, if you would see our apartment week to week, like the number of Amazon boxes, the number of like, you know, stuff that we have, like when we first like started meeting here, we had stuff underneath our bed, up in this closet, up in that closet, like in this cabinet, underneath the kitchen sink. Like, we had stuff for the church everywhere. And so we were like getting rid of our own personal stuff in order to accommodate like church stuff. And then it got so bad. It got to the point last year around this time where we were just like, you know what, like, this is like, you know, insane, and it's creating a lot of stress. So like, we've got to go like get some sort of like storage type thing, not like an external storage unit, but some sort of storage unit like for our apartment in order to like, you know, keep all of these paper clips together. Like, because like all the things that you don't think you need to start a church, you need. And then you realize, like, where are we going to put all of this in a New York City apartment? So we went out and we spent some money to buy some sort of storage shelving unit thing that we keep in our bedroom. We remove some other furniture, put this thing there to accommodate like what we're doing here. And all of these things required, all of these things were necessary. Like, we wanted to make room for something. And in all three examples, we had to sacrifice something in order to make room for that. You see, it's a principle of life, but in all three of those examples, what we were sacrificing, what we were giving up, paled in comparison to what we were getting in return, right? Like, when I think about, you know, my marriage, way better than that signed Larry Fitzgerald thing that I had up on the wall. It's even better than the Puerto Rico flag. Like, my kid, way better than playing basketball with a bunch of old guys for a long time, multiple times a week. The time I get with my daughter. And you know, what we have in here, you know, is so meaningful. And so what I have in my apartment in terms of stuff that I have to make room for pales in comparison to what I have in here. And in all of those ways, it was like a game of bigger and better. I had to trade something in order to get something better. But it was worth it every single time. And it reminds me of a passage in the New Testament that Jesus spoke of, a parable or a set of parables, I should say, that Jesus taught to illustrate this idea of bigger and better, of kind of recognizing that when you make room, there's a sacrifice that's required, but what you receive in return stands to make a greater impact or have a greater legacy than what you offered or what you gave up. And it's found in Matthew chapter 13. And, you know, pause for a second before we get into the text. Like, Matthew 13 is kind of this particular set of verses are coming on the heels, kind of on the back end of, like, you know, Jesus is just on a roll. Like, sometimes when you're preaching, you're just kind of in the flow. Like, you're just going for it. And you're like, oh, there's like this or there's like this. And you just start speaking, you start saying things. And like, it's just kind of one after another. You're bringing truth to light. You're bringing things to people's minds that they didn't consider or they didn't account for, or they didn't take into light. And Jesus in Matthew chapter 13, Matthew's detailing, man, Jesus was on a roll. He was preaching. He was going and he was talking about this. He was talking about that. He was bringing all these things. He was painting a picture for people so that they could see something that they couldn't quite grasp or couldn't quite understand in the moment. But Jesus just kept at it and he kept providing context for what this one thing, this kind of big idea that he had to share with people, he was trying to illustrate it for them in a way. And so we get kind of to the end of Jesus' sermon, but I've got a kind of semi-bad news. This is not the end of my sermon. And so we get to the end of Jesus' sermon, but this is not the end of mine. Matthew chapter 13, verses 44 through 46 say this. Jesus speaking says, "The kingdom of heaven is like a treasure that a man discovered hidden in a field, and in his excitement, he hid it again and sold everything he owned to get enough money to buy the field." Second parable, verse 45. "Again, the kingdom of heaven is like a merchant on the lookout for choice pearls. And when he discovered a pearl of great value, he sold everything he owned and bought it." So Jesus gives two illustrations to kind of depict or help people understand the worth of this big idea, the kingdom of heaven. And all throughout Matthew 13, this is what he's talking about. This is what he's trying to illustrate for people. This is what he's trying to clarify. This is what he's trying to explain. And so he talks about what it's like. He talks about the impact of the kingdom of heaven. He talks about how it grows. He talks about how it expands. He talks about what it takes to ignite the kingdom of heaven. And then he gets to this place and he says, this is the worth of the kingdom of heaven. This is the value of the kingdom of heaven. And he decides to kind of illustrate it using these parables, using these stories about two different people, two kind of fictitious characters. One who's out in a field digging for some reason, and upon digging, he finds a treasure. Like, you ever go to the beach and you see those people with like kind of like the metal detector things? And like, every time I ask them, like, I don't ask all the time, but every time like I ask someone, I'm like, hey, do you ever find things? Oh yeah, I find things all the time. And I'm like, is this true? Like, do they really like find things all the time? Like, how hard did you have to work to find that thing? So Jesus talks about the guy with the metal detector, and he's like, he's out in a field and he found something, and he found a treasure. The problem was, for whatever reason, he was digging in a field that didn't belong to him. And so he was digging in this field, decides, you know what? There's a treasure here. Let me bury it. Let me put it back. And then let me go off, sell everything I own, because the worth of this field is worth more than what I have currently. So I have to let go of some things. I have to sacrifice some things. But I see that there's a greater value in what the field has to offer. And so then Jesus talks about a second person whose job as a merchant was to go to barter and to trade and to kind of acquire goods that he could sell and then resell for maybe a greater value or a greater margin. And so he's out about his business and he comes across a pearl of great value. We're not told how valuable this pearl is. We're just told that this pearl has so much value that this merchant, who you would assume has lots of goods, has lots of valuable things, is willing to trade all of his valuable things for this one pearl. And so this merchant goes back and he sells everything he has and releases all of that, exchanges it for some funds, comes back to buy this one pearl. And Jesus says the kingdom of heaven is like that. The kingdom of heaven is worth everything you have. It's worth everything you own. The question is, what is the kingdom of heaven? Well, what is it exactly? What is it like? What is it? You know, how do we know what it is? How do we experience it? How do we see it? How can we tell? Yes, that's the kingdom of heaven. And at its simplest, at its core, the kingdom of heaven is simply a manifestation of God's goodness, his grace, and his glory throughout all people. At its core, the kingdom of heaven is simply a depiction of what God is and doing and what God is doing in heaven, revealing itself here on earth. And so Jesus is saying the kingdom of heaven, the life change, the transformation, when you see someone going from bondage to freedom, when you see someone going from sickness or brokenness to healing, when you see someone going from darkness to light, when you see someone going from shame to freedom and confidence, when you see someone standing in sin and brokenness and hardship and experiencing freedom and forgiveness and love, when you see someone who used to be a certain way, and now you didn't even believe that they were once that way because of what Jesus has done in their lives, that is the kingdom of heaven. And that person or that those persons end up carrying that with them and affecting the lives and the people around them. This is the kingdom of heaven. This is what Jesus was saying, is that God's goodness, his glory, and his grace displaying itself through people's lives is the kingdom of heaven. And when you see that taking place, it's worth everything you've got. When you see someone experiencing that, when you see someone taking that step, it's worth whatever you have to offer, even if what you have to offer is something that you have to go sell in order to have whatever you would need to acquire this. And that's a pretty significant thing. It's a pretty bold proclamation and a pretty drastic step. But the thing that Jesus says is that when you do that, or when that person does that, they never go back. In fact, when you look at Jesus' words, there's never an ounce or a hint of regret or shame or remorse. There's never a point of, oh, wow, that person, you know, I traded for that great pearl, but man, that was stupid. Man, I wish I could have that one back. Man, I wish I could go back to what I longed for or what I had in the past. You see, Jesus was making the point and the comment and helping people understand that the kingdom of heaven is worth obtaining and it's worth stepping into and it's worth trading up for and it's worth receiving. And when you do that, you won't find discouragement, you won't be disheartened, and you won't be disappointed. In fact, you'll experience zero remorse. You'll feel zero guilt. Instead, what you'll find is confidence and hope, because there is nothing better on this planet than seeing someone's life change. And the reason we know that's true is because look at your own lives. When you see what Jesus has done, when you embrace what Jesus has done, you wouldn't say, well, you know what, I wish I could go back to that old way of me, of brokenness, of shame, of hardship, of frustration, of disappointment, all those things that I'm feeling. And you might not be exactly where you are or where you want to be, I should say, but you know for sure you don't want to go back to where you used to be. And so if that's true in our own lives, how much more is that true, or how true also is that in the lives of others? And you know what's really, really exciting about this? You know what's really cool about this? Is that we as a community are seeing the kingdom of heaven through Metachurch. We as a community are seeing the kingdom of heaven through Metachurch. The things that are taking place here are the things that Jesus was talking about. Or I should say, the things that we get to experience or see apart from this. And I'll kind of maybe backtrack to several years ago when I was still living in South Carolina, still working at part of another church. And one day, one afternoon, I was sitting in my office and I just felt the Holy Spirit prompt me and say, go to the whiteboard and draw this picture. And so this is before Meta even had a name, before we even knew exactly when we'd be coming back to New York. So I go to this whiteboard. And on this whiteboard, I feel like the Holy Spirit say, draw like a picture of a globe on the top left. So your left, my right over here. But draw a globe over here. and then draw a picture of the Empire State Building. I'm not going to judge you on how accurate it looks. Just draw a picture of what you think the Empire State Building looks like. So thanks for not judging me. So I draw a picture of the Empire State Building. Now draw another globe on the right-hand side, on the top right of this board. So I draw another globe. It says, now go back to this top globe, draw arrows from the globe to the bottom of this building, and then draw arrows from the top of the building going out back to this globe. And he says, now this is the interpretation. People from all over the world are coming to New York City. The building represents New York City. People from all over the world are coming to New York City. And their goal, their aspiration, their intent is to kind of ascend to the top of something, their industry, their field, performance, art, dance, education, finance, whatever it is. They want to get to the top of that in some way or some capacity. And then eventually those people who I've sent from all over the world here will be released back to the world to do whatever they've been called to do in whatever capacity they can back around the world. It's a cool picture, bro. And he said, okay, now do this. Draw a church, small, at the bottom of the Empire State Building. So I drew a church. He said, now draw arrows going up from the church to the top of the Empire State Building. So I did that. And guys, I'm not even lying. This is exactly how it was happening. The Holy Spirit said, Ricky, this is the picture for your church. Your church is to be the elevator that helps lift people to the top and releases them back to the world. Yeah. So this isn't about New York City. The kingdom of heaven is bigger than New York City. The kingdom of heaven is broader than New York City. Your job, your mission, your calling in life is to receive people as I send them from around the world in this city and help elevate them, help lift them up, help them ascend to where they are supposed to be, and then release them to be whatever I've called them to be, some missionaries, some pastors, some church leaders, some business leaders, some educators, some, you know, whatever it is, just whatever I've called them to, don't mess with it, just lift them up.
Yeah, that's so good.
And release them. This is the kingdom of heaven, Ricky. This is what it's about. It's not about this city. It's not about this location or this neighborhood. It's about the world. And you know what's really ironic about that? Because I'm sitting in an office by myself in Anderson, South Carolina in 2016 with no understanding or no context, 2015 with no context of when I'd be coming back to start a church in New York City. But you know what's happened through our church? You know the things that have taken place? Like a year and a half ago, we started a podcast. And this year alone, that podcast has been downloaded something close to like 4,000 times. And it's been downloaded from parts of the world, like all over the world. In fact, I'll share one quick story with you. A few months ago, some of you met them, but we had some visitors attending church on a Sunday from Germany. And these two, you know, college students from Germany came, but the way they came was totally like weird. It didn't make any sense. You see, back in June, I received an email that honestly seemed a little bit fishy and a bit like spammy. And it was like, hey, we're part of a leadership program at this university in Germany and would love to find out if we could spend, we're coming, you know, there's a group of 17 of us coming over and we'd love to spend, you know, some time with you to learn about leadership. We're learning from different businesses, industry leaders, Like, would you be willing to meet? And I was like, all right, let me double check the email URL first and make sure there's not a bunch of question marks in it because that's usually spam. And so like there was, the email was legit. Let me look up this, you know, like website in an incognito browser and see like, you know, like if this is like the right thing, it's a legit website, it's a legit university. Okay. Like this is good. And then like, so I started communicating that and I was like, well, how'd you find them? We're like, I don't know. We just did a random internet search for church in New York City and your church popped up. And so you were the first one we reached out to because we liked your website. It's like, okay, cool. So we scheduled a time in September of this year where we would meet for like an hour and a half to talk about leadership principles or leadership ideas in the context of leading a nonprofit. And so I spoke for like an hour and 15 minutes or whatever with some Q&A involved. And then at the end of this kind of like presentation or whatever, several of the students raised their hand. They were like, hey, could we come to church like and see your worship service? I was like, well, yeah, of course. Like I mean, what am I going to say? No. Like, yes, of course you can come. So they came. My wife and I go out to lunch with them on Sunday afternoon. And we start talking about like this whole story about how they found us. And they're like, yeah, we don't have any church background. It's not a Christian university. None of the classmates are Christian. None of them grew up going to church anywhere. And they're like, yeah, but we found your church. And so we started listening to your podcast. And so I was like, wait, you listen to the podcast? Like, yeah, we started listening in the summer and it's really good. We really like it. And so like coming here, we wanted to come visit your church. And then we're like, well, maybe we can try to find a church somewhere back in Germany that we could attend and bring our classmates to. Yeah. And it was like, wait, what? Wow. Like how? I Google Meta Church and can't find Meta Church. And someone in Germany can find it? Like, I'm not lying. I Google it and cannot find our church, and it makes me so angry. And, like, somehow people in Germany are finding it like it's nothing. But it's not just Germany, right? Like, you know, for those of you who are regulars, you know that financially we commit 5% of everything that receives to go back into a church plant in Raleigh, North Carolina, through our partner church, Freedom. And so just 2 weeks ago, I just found this out this week. 2 weeks ago, you know, we started doing that, and that's something that we've done from the very beginning as a church. We've not shied away from giving elsewhere. We've not shied away from stepping into what God has called us. And we've not waited to say, well, wait till we get bigger, or wait till we get X amount. Like, if God is calling us to do something financially, we're going to step out in faith and do it because that's who we are. And that's the ethos and the DNA of what we do as a church. And so we stepped out and started doing this years ago. But then recently, as Freedom planted in Raleigh, North Carolina, we decided to commit to them. And so I just found out that literally, like, in the last 2 weeks, Raleigh, which started meeting in September, has decided that they're going to do the same thing for a church plant in India. And they're giving monthly. They said the same thing. We're not going to wait. Like, you guys have inspired us to take this step right now. And so they're in Bangalore, India, starting a church. And the money that they're giving to the team in Bangalore is literally providing not just for their housing, but their meeting venue. And so that all these people, a team of eight, can actually live off of, because of the conversion rates and different things like that. They're literally supplying and sustaining an entire church in India because of the generosity of people in this room. Yeah. You see, that's the kingdom of heaven taking place. And again, it's not just like, you know, India or Raleigh or Germany. It's like right here in this neighborhood. You know, this summer we were presented with an opportunity as part of our vicinity series to, like, actually serve in our neighborhood and to serve in our community. And so since then, we've been providing free haircuts for senior citizens in the surrounding housing projects. And to date, we've paid for and provided over 225 free haircuts for senior citizens in this neighborhood. Now, if I were you, I'd be clapping. That's what I would be doing. Because listen, this is the kingdom of heaven. You see, we're seeing the gospel. We're seeing the kingdom of heaven go out through our word via podcasts. We're seeing the kingdom of heaven go out via our finances. We're seeing the kingdom of heaven go out via our service by doing things like haircuts for senior citizens, where we bring in barbers and ask them to donate their time or give of their time, and we pay them to do this. But it's not just seeing the kingdom of heaven through MetaChurch. We're experiencing the kingdom of heaven at MetaChurch. We're experiencing it here. And so here's what I want you to do. It's going to get a little awkward for a second, but it's only going to be a second. I want you to turn around and just look around at the people in the room. And you can smile. Listen, this isn't an elevator. You can make eye contact and you can smile. You can say hello. You can wave. You can laugh. Told you, it was awkward for just a second. But literally, when you look around the room, there are people from different walks of life. There are people from different backgrounds, different upbringings. We have people who call Meta home that have come from different countries. Asia, Europe represented, you know, Central America, Latin America. We have Black, we have Caribbean, we have, you know, Caucasian. We have, like, all these different ethnic groups that are a part of this small little community. But it's not just the ethnic diversity. Some of us come from homes where we grew up in a loving home with loving parents and saw a great depiction of marriage, of following Jesus. We have that. Some of us grew up where we didn't have any of that. Some of us grew up with, you know, split parents, or maybe we didn't come to Christ until later in life. Some of us come from, you know, well-meaning families. Some of us come from broken situations. Some of us have, you know, religion as kind of ingrained from our birthright. Some of us were like, I'm still trying to figure this thing out, and I don't know that I will, but I'm just kind of along for the ride. Some of us know, like, the Bible ill and out. We can quote out verses. We can say these things. Others are like, wait, that's in the Bible? And so, like, you know, we have this diverse range of experiences and backgrounds, yet somehow the thing that's bringing us together is this idea, this concept of the kingdom of heaven, and it's brought us together to be a part of this thing, a part of this community, so that we can recognize Jesus, so that we can see Jesus, but so that we can experience Jesus, not alone, but together. Yeah. This is the kingdom of heaven. The people from different socioeconomic backgrounds, different ethnic backgrounds, different political preferences, different neighborhoods could come together and worship under one name and experience life changing. Now, what I want you to think about is not just the people around you, but now think about yourself. Think about your own life. Think about what's changed, not because of Meta. So I'm not sitting here, oh, Meta's the, you know, the holy grail over here. But because God has chosen Meta to help form your story. Think about what Jesus has done in your life. For some of you, think about the community that you found. Think about the friendships that you've experienced. For others, think about the faith that's been restored. where you felt like I was wandering away or just kind of like walking away, and yet somehow God kind of looped me into this group that wouldn't let me walk away, or they're pressed in or encouraged. Some of you have been looking for places to attend with your kids or with your families, and it's like, we've tried these different places, but now here we are. And it's not because we've settled, but it's because God answered a prayer. Some of you in a year's time or in 6 months' time have been more intentional about your relationship with Jesus than you've ever been at any other point in your life. And again, it's not because MetaChurch is MetaChurch, but it's because God has chosen MetaChurch to be the vessel to connect and communicate with you and help you experience his kingdom in your life. You see, this is the goodness of God. This is the glory of God. And of course, it's the grace of God in our lives. And Jesus said, this is the kingdom of heaven, and this thing is worth trading up for. This thing that you're talking about, this thing that you're seeing, this thing that you're experiencing is worth giving something up for. And as I reflected on this passage these last few weeks, it actually brought me back to a time about 10 years ago, literally 10 years ago, when I was a part of a church serving outside of Portland, Oregon with my wife. We were student pastors at a kind of a church plant reboot. And God had given our church leadership this audacious vision to begin planting new churches, both in that region or in that area where we were, in outside of Portland, Oregon, and in the Philippines. There was a church elder who was, a part of our church. And then he, God just literally called him through kind of these wild circumstances to move to the Philippines to help raise church leaders and pastors in the southern islands of the Philippines. And so our goal, this is 2009, heading into 2010, our goal was that we would start 10 locations in the Philippines by 2015. And so we were raising money to start these churches, raising money to help send Steve Bragg, this elder, over to the Philippines. And I remember Chris and I, we were 2009, 23 years old. I was 23, she was 22. We just bought a house. And if you've ever bought a house, then you know what it means to be house broke. And we were house broke to the max. Like, we were living off of, like, we were both underpaid. Our income combined was like hardly anything, but we were giving faithfully to the church. But we knew that in this offering, our church was doing a special, like, kind of year-end Christmas offering to go to the Philippines. And we knew that we wanted to be a part of it. We knew that we wanted to contribute to it. But we didn't know, like, where we'd be able to do it, like where we'd have the means or how we'd be able to get to that, because we didn't really have margin. We weren't going out. We weren't ordering in. We were like going to Big Lots to buy discount hamburger helper. Like, I mean, we weren't like, living the dream life in that respect. But we knew that this was a worthy investment and we wanted to be in. And so I don't know exactly, I don't remember the details of what prompted it, but I remember, we came to this realization that, like, the only thing of value that we actually had was sitting on Krista's left ring finger. And it was her diamond engagement ring. And it was this engagement ring that I had worked hard to save money to get and was able to, like, kind of find this jeweler that was actually going out of business, so everything was like 70% off or something. And so I was able to get, like, this really expensive ring for not so expensive amount of money. And it was literally the only thing of value that we had. We had one car that we were making payments on. We didn't have two cars. We didn't have like a security case of other stuff. And our bank was like laughable. And so we looked at this thing, and girls, you'll get this, guys, let me help you understand. Like, this piece of metal is not just a piece of metal. This is a longing. It represents a commitment. It depicts a dream. And so to say, like, hey, let's sell that dream. Let's sell, that longing. Let's sell what that, piece of metal represents is not an easy thing to do. But we both knew this is the only way that we'd be financially able in a position to contribute to this thing. And so we did. We got the ring appraised, and we ended up selling it for like something close to like $2,000 or whatever. And we literally took whatever the money was, $1,500, $2,000, whatever, and just took that money and then literally redirected it all back to the church. All of it. We didn't say, well, this could help us pay our rent next month or our mortgage, so let's keep half of it and give God. It was like, no, this is of great value. This is the kingdom of heaven, and it's worth it to us. And as I thought about this over the last few weeks, the thing that kind of blew my mind was that that was 10 years ago. And that step of faith 10 years ago triggered this audacious faith in our lives, to live and respond, to do whatever it takes to see the kingdom of heaven fulfilled. This past week, I reached out to Steve Bragg, who's still leading and serving with the Philippines. And I connected with him and I just said, Steve, like what? So what's happening? Catch me. I'm still in the newsletter and I see these different monthly reports. But like, I just said, you know, like what's going on? And you know, like they don't have 10 churches today. They have 31 and a 32nd starting in January. But you know what he told me or what his newsletter said this past week? He said, we are literally seeing what it says in Acts where numbers, where salvations are taking place in the church daily. That life change is happening literally all the way around the world. And it wasn't because I was the one that supported it. It wasn't the one because Krista, it wasn't because Krista was like, well, this has to happen or they're not going to be able to do this. It was because we got to partner. And when you give, you get to partner in the kingdom of heaven with MetaChurch. When we give, this is what we're invited into. It's no longer just seeing. It's no longer just experiencing. It's now partnering and participating in the kingdom of heaven. And I've never once regretted that decision. I've never once had remorse over, well, how do we, you know, do this? Or why did we do this? You know, Krista's got another ring on her finger. Things are good. But man, that became a catalyst for anything and everything God wanted to do in our lives financially and in regards to faith. And I wouldn't trade it for anything else, not just because of what it's done for me, but to know that people are being saved every single day and churches are being planted ad nauseum, you know, 31 with 32nd coming up here in the next few weeks because people committed to participating in the kingdom of heaven. That's what we get to do. Hey, thanks for listening to this week's podcast. We hope it encourages you in your faith and blesses you throughout the week. If you'd like to find out more about MetaChurch, you can find us online at meta.church, and we hope to see you again next week on the podcast.